This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Following weeks of pro-Palestinian protests at several American universities, U.S. President Joe Biden warned that order must prevail, even as he underscored that dissent is essential for democracy. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wada-Kaswara has the report.
President Joe Biden finally addressed the issue Thursday, saying Americans have a right to protest, but not the right to cause chaos.
Peaceful protest is in the best tradition of how Americans respond to consequential issues. But, neither are we a lawless country. We are a civil society, and order must prevail.
The protests are a growing political dilemma for Biden ahead of the November presidential election. While Republicans accuse him of coddling the demonstrators, young voters, progressive Democrats, Arab and Muslim Americans are incensed at police crackdowns on protests and Biden's steadfast support for Israel. More than 1,800 people have been arrested on college and university campuses since April 18th. Patsy Wida-Kuswara, VOA News, Washington.
AP correspondent Norman Hall reports on a new round of gang attacks in Haiti.
Gangs in Haiti laid siege to several neighborhoods in Port-au-Prince, burning homes and exchanging gunfire with police for hours as hundreds fled the violence early Thursday, one of the biggest attacks since Haiti's new prime minister was announced. The violence erupted in neighborhoods located southwest of the main international airport, which has remained closed for nearly 2 months. As new leaders take charge in the country amid squabbling, Haitians are demanding that they prioritize their safety, as gangs remain more powerful and better armed than Haiti's national police. I'm Norman Hall.
And for details on much more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com or the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. NATO countries say they are deeply concerned by a campaign of hybrid activities on the military alliance's soil they attribute to Russia. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said Thursday in a message on social media platform X that actions including disinformation, sabotage, acts of violence, and cyber and electronic interference will not deter us from supporting Ukraine. AP's Ed Donahue now reports another U.S. Capitol rioter has been given a lengthy prison sentence.
A man from Georgia was sentenced to 5 years in prison for his role in the Capitol riot. Jack Witten struck an officer with a metal crutch and dragged him headfirst, face down, into the crowd on the lower west terrace of the Capitol. Later, in a text message, Witten boasted he fed them to the people. Prosecutors say 20 minutes later, Witten kicked at, threatened, and threw a construction pylon at officers, saying, "You're gonna die tonight." In court, Witten showed remorse for what he called his horrible actions and told the judge he has changed. The judge told Witten the videos of him attacking police were gruesome, adding he was out of control. Ed Donahue, Washington.
The AP's Haya Panjwani reports on American views of China.
4 in 10 Americans see China as an enemy. An annual Pew Research Center survey found that 4 in 10 Americans now label China as an enemy. That number is up from a quarter 2 years ago and reached the highest level in 5 years. The Pew report samples 3,600 U.S. adults. Half of them think of China as a competitor, and only 6% consider the country to be a partner. These findings come as the Biden administration is trying to stabilize relations with the country to avoid clashes, while still trying to counter the world's second largest economy. The report also found that roughly half of Americans think limiting China's power and influence should be a top U.S. foreign policy priority. Only 8% don't think it should be a priority at all. Haya Panjwani, Washington.
The death toll from heavy rains in Brazil's southernmost state of Rio Grande rose to 29, local authorities say, on Thursday evening as the state government declared a state of public calamity to handle the dramatic situation. The search also continues for 60 people missing, just over 10,000 residents displaced across dozens of cities. President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva flew over the affected areas and met with local leaders in Santa Maria on Thursday for an emergency meeting. The U.S. says it's trying to engage North Korea by sending messages repeatedly in various ways, despite Pyongyang's lack of interest shown in dialogue with Washington while escalating threats in the region. For details on more news, join us at our website, voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, May 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are following. Today, Friday, is World Press Freedom Day.
When we lose a journalist, we lose our eyes and ears to the outside world. We lose a voice for the voiceless. We lose, in fact, the human rights defender.
A Uganda journalist discusses the struggle by media houses for viability in the age of digital information. A U.S. House committee asked the Speaker to invite Kenyan President William Ruto to address a joint session of Congress. British authorities begin detaining migrants for transfer to Rwanda. Liberian President Joseph Nyuma Boakai signs an executive order establishing the Office of a War and Economic Crimes Court in their country.
Let the word go forth that we will remain firm in our stand against injustice and impunity, and that we have no doubt that this move will go a long way.
And President Biden says campus protesters have the right to demonstrate, but not to cause violence. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. At least 71 journalists and media workers were killed in 2023. This is according to the United Nations High Commission for Human Rights, which says that only 13% of murder cases have been investigated. And as the international community marks World Press Freedom Day today, Friday, African journalists are facing challenges when it comes to media freedom, with Eritrea being among the countries, making it hard for journalists to carry out their duties. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
In 2023, at least 320 journalists and media workers were imprisoned, the highest number ever. According to the United Nations, more than 750 journalists have been attacked in the past 15 years while covering environmental issues. This year's Press Freedom Day theme is A Press for the Planet, Journalism in the Face of Environmental Crisis. The UN says environmental journalists need protection from both governments and their employers. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the frequency of such attacks is on the rise.
It is no surprise that some powerful people, companies and institutions will stop at nothing to prevent environmental journalists from doing their jobs. Media freedom is under siege, and environmental journalism is an increasingly dangerous profession. Dozens of journalists covering illegal mining, logging, poaching and other environmental issues have been killed in recent decades. In the vast majority of cases, no one has been held to account.
In Africa, freedom of the press has been suppressed, with some journalists being suspended and media outlets shut down by governments. The African Program Coordinator at the Committee to Protect Journalists, Angela Quinto, says most countries violate the freedom of the press, with the majority of journalists facing prosecution and criminal charges.
The situation in sub-Saharan Africa is not particularly good for journalists and several countries. In terms of sub-Saharan Africa, we actually had 47 journalists in jail, and that was an increase from the previous year. And we found that, as usual, Eritrea was the worst jailer of journalists. We had Ethiopia as the second worst, and then Cameroon as the third worst, and Rwanda.
She says the Committee to Protect Journalists ensures there is accountability when journalists are abused and their rights violated.
So what we have seen is the suspension of media outlets, or, you know, the banning of journalists. We have foreign journalists being kicked out of countries, being deported. We obviously, campaigns are a big part of what we do. We have an impunity campaign, for example, that is quite important.
The United Nations emphasizes the importance of independence, ethical and quality journalism in recognition of the crucial role journalists play as advocates of human rights. Volker Turk is the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights.
When we lose a journalist, we lose our eyes and ears to the outside world. We lose a voice for the voiceless. We lose, in fact, the human rights defender. World Press Freedom Day was established to celebrate the value of truth and to protect the people who work courageously to uncover it.
Guterres says the UN recognizes the work of journalists in informing and engaging the public.
Without facts, we cannot fight mis and disinformation. Without press freedom, we won't have any freedom. A free press is not a choice, but a necessity.
He therefore says he is calling on governments, the private sector and civil society to reaffirm their commitment to safeguarding press freedom and the rights of journalists and media professionals around the world. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
Today, Friday, is World Press Freedom Day. It was established by UNESCO in 1991 to highlight the vital role of a free, independent, and diverse press to democracy. The theme for this year's World Press Freedom Day is A Press for the Planet, Journalism in the Face of the Environment Crisis. Daniel Kalinaki is the chairperson of the Uganda Editors Guild. He tells me that while Uganda does not currently have journalists in jail, media houses are contending with the issue of viability in the wake of the need to digitize information for readers.
I would rate media freedom in Uganda as 50-50 because we don't have any journalists currently in jail for their work as journalists. But we've also seen, particularly during heightened political activity, direct attacks on journalists, including arrests, intimidation. We've seen journalists' equipment destroyed while they're out on duty. We've also seen more insidiously attempts to influence journalists by offering them bribes or by co-opting them to serve particular agendas. So you deal with the normative attacks on journalists, especially during political times, but then you also then constantly have to deal with attempts to influence the power doing the journalism and the media houses that put it out to the public.
So on this World Press Freedom Day, what is your advice to the media?
So this year, the theme centers around climate change, and that's not a traditional topic that journalists deal with on World Press Freedom Day, but I think it speaks to the need for journalists to be more relevant to their audiences. Right now, we're going through a very atypical climate season across East Africa with flooding in Kenya, heavy rains in Uganda, and I think journalists need to reflect on whether they are being relevant to the publics that they serve and whether they can build a new social contract with them, because the new world order is going to require media houses to have commercial contracts directly with their customers through paid content, away from the traditional model, which is to deal with advertisers as their key sources of revenue. So it's both a challenge to make that transition, but I think ultimately it's a good inflection point for media houses to, you know, become more relevant and to reassess whether they're actually serving the public interest, because those that aren't doing that, that aren't credible and aren't trusted, will not have a standing chance of surviving in the new world order.
Before I let you go, how do you think that works for African media besides economic survival?
Broadly speaking, for African media, the public broadcasters in most countries are actually state broadcasters that merely serve as a mouthpiece for the regime in power. Therefore, they do not have the credibility that allows them to do public service journalism that other public broadcasters that like VOA or the BBC are set out to do. People then have to rely on private broadcasters, but many of them are owned by either politicians, religious groupings, or people who are merely using a public good, the spectrum, to create a private product, which is profit. The challenge for many of the private media houses, which are the most influential, now that advertisers are moving directly to customers, particularly through social media, is how do they go out to the public and show that they can be trusted, that their audiences can trust what they are serving them, so that they can actually subscribe or pay to access the content.
Daniel Kalinaki is the chairperson of the Uganda Editors Guild. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kampala. The Foreign Affairs Committee of the U.S. House of Representatives has put in a formal request to Speaker Mike Johnson to invite Kenyan President William Ruto to address a joint session of Congress. President Ruto is scheduled to make an official visit to the United States on May 23rd, the first time in two decades that an African president has been accorded a state visit to the U.S. VOA's Douglas Mpuga has the details.
President William Ruto could make history in the United States if a request to the Speaker is granted. She'll be the first Kenyan head of state to address a joint session of Congress and the first African head of state to address Congress since former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf 18 years ago. In their letter to the Speaker, House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Michael McCaul and Ranking Member Gregory Meeks said such an invitation would underscore the importance of the U.S.-Kenya relations and send a valuable signal to the people of Africa. They said U.S.-Kenya relations continue to deepen, encompassing strong political, economic, technological, and cultural ties. The letter notes that the U.S. is among Kenya's largest trading partners, and Kenya is one of Africa's most dynamic economies, boosting a top utilization rate of U.S. market access under the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA. This year marks the 60-year anniversary of the U.S.-Kenya diplomatic relationship. Nearly 100,000 Kenyan Americans call the United States home. The congressman further pointed out that the U.S. maintains an overseas military base at Manda Bay on the Indian Ocean to support operations to counter terrorist threats from Al-Shabaab. These, they said, are just some examples of the close ties forged between the U.S. and Kenya over the past six decades. It is crucial for members of Congress to understand how Kenya's active participation in Africa's future and beyond is vital for peace and stability in the region and aligns with the broader economic and strategic interests of the United States, concludes the letter to Speaker Johnson. The news of the possibility of President Ruto addressing the joint session of Congress was received with excitement in Kenya, according to local media. Liberia's former president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, did so 18 years ago and used the occasion to tell of her country's rise from the ashes of a deadly civil war. For VOA, I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, May 3rd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Liberian President Joseph Nyuma Boakai Thursday signed an executive order establishing the office of a War and Economic Crimes Court in the country. This after both houses of the legislature passed the resolutions to establish the court and bring about justice and reconciliation for crimes committed during Liberia's long civil war. Addressing the nation on Thursday, the president said the executive order signifies his government's commitment to justice and the rule of law.
To signify in the clearest possible terms our commitment to this justice and the rule of law, as well as to amplify our affirmation that impunity would not be allowed to stand on our watch, I find it only prudent and fair to embrace and further both of the efforts that the national legislature has so courageously invested in this matter. It is in view of it that I today, Thursday, May 2nd, 2024, sign and issue Executive Order Number 131, establishing the Office of a War and Economic Crimes Court for a year. Let the word go forth that we will remain firm in our stand against injustice and impunity, and that we have no doubt that this move will go a long way in helping to restore respectability and integrity to this country and to be reconciled and united as a people. In this resolve, we want to do so as we think Liberia, as we love Liberia and build a great Liberia. We ought all to lend their noble effort, all the support it needs, so that once and for all, we can keep our eyes on the forward night and not remain stuck in the ugly memories of our unfortunate past. May God bless you and save our nation.
That was Liberian President Joseph Newman Boakai speaking Thursday after signing an executive order establishing the Office of War and Economic Crimes Court in Liberia. British authorities said this week that they have begun detaining migrants in preparation for them to be sent to Rwanda in the next 9 to 11 weeks, a move that's part of Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's flagship immigration policy. Yasmin Ackman is the United Kingdom Director for Human Rights Watch. She tells Piers Caravan them that sending asylum seekers from the UK to Rwanda is a violation of human rights.
Human Rights Watch is very clear that the Rwanda is not a country to be deporting asylum seekers to, and this is a view upheld by the UK Supreme Court that also found that Rwanda is not a safe country. Unfortunately, what the UK government has done, set aside its international obligations and has sought to legislate to, in fact, they're trying to make fiction fact, which is by saying that Rwanda is a safe country. So it's a very, very disturbing situation.
Why does Human Rights Watch say that Rwanda is not a safe country? They've made a lot of strides since the genocide, obviously.
Rwanda is not a safe country. What we see in Rwanda is significant repression of anyone challenges Kagame on anything, really. We see that there is journalists that are currently in prison, that these suppression of political activity, or even just people raising issues about human rights. It also has seeped in 2018. There were refugees that was shot dead. We also know Rwanda has been carrying out significant transnational repression in Europe, in Africa, and other countries.
The government has said it's going to happen within the next few weeks. Is HRW actively doing anything to try to still block that from happening?
Well, the individuals themselves who have deportation notice, fortunately, the bill that was passed essentially says that the set aside what we call interim measures. So the situation is unclear as to when, in fact, persons who would be deported actually end up in Rwanda. But as you said, the government has been very clear that what they're doing now is detaining people and maybe subject to deportation. So it is a very, very concerning situation that Human Rights Watch is certainly watching and looking to document.
The Prime Minister has said the whole reason for doing this was to deter migrants from taking this dangerous trip by shaky, you know, teetery boats to the shores of England and other places. And now there was a report that some migrants say they're going to go to Ireland instead. And so he said, oh, let's see, it's already having its impact. What do you say to that?
We've seen this same rhetoric, the same unlawful being implemented and being in Australia, in America and Europe. And what we've seen is that, in fact, this does not deter people. People are seeking protection from persecution, and they are going to find any means possible, just like you or I would do.
That's the UK Director for Human Rights Watch, Yasmin Ackman. She was speaking from London with my colleague Carol Van Dam. As protests in support of the Palestinian people have been held on more than 100 colleges campuses across the United States, President Biden has weighed in, saying the demonstrations put to the test some fundamental American principles. Details from VOA's Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
President Biden, in prepared remarks from the White House Roosevelt Room on Thursday, said campus protests are testing the right to free speech and peaceful assembly, as well as the rule of law.
We are not an authoritarian nation where we silence people or squash dissent. The American people are heard. In fact, peaceful protest is in the best tradition of how Americans respond to consequential issues.
The president emphasized, however, that violent protests cross the line, as well as hate speech. Some Jewish students on campuses have been targets of violence and anti-Semitic chants. Asked by reporters whether the demonstrations have prompted him to change his Middle East policy and if the National Guard should be sent to schools, Biden responded no to each question. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Kenya and Tanzania are bracing for a cyclone on the heels of torrential rains that have devastated East Africa, killing more than
350 people and forcing tens of thousands from their homes. The French news agency AFP reports that in addition to claiming 188 lives in Kenya since March, the floods have displaced 165,000 people, with 90 reported missing, the Interior Ministry said, as the government warned citizens to remain on alert. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with football. The first leg of Africa's Premier Club football competition, the CAF Champions League final between Esperance Sportive de Tunis and Egypt's Al Ahly, will be played in Raids on Saturday. The Confederation of African Football also announced that the second leg will take place in Cairo on May 25th. For this 2024 edition of the CAF Champions League, CAF has made available a prize fund of $4 million for the winning team and $2 million for the runners-up. The CAF Champions League final between the two giants of North African football, with 15 Champions League titles between them, 11 for Al Ahly and 4 for Esperance, will see a star-studded lineup battle it out for the continent's most prestigious trophy. And on to athletics, where a South Sudanese female athlete has become the third runner on the refugee Olympic team to be suspended for a positive doping test, with the announcement coming 2 days before the IOC confirms its selection of athletes for the Paris Games. Angelina Nadai Luhalith was informed of her alleged use of banned heart medication trimetazidine and was provisionally suspended. Luhalith, who fled war in South Sudan as a child and took refuge in a refugee camp in Kenya, was on a scholarship from the International Olympic Committee to prepare for her third consecutive Summer Games. The 31-year-old ran the 1,500 meters for the refugee team at the last two Summer Games, staying with athletics. A total of 893 athletes from 54 countries will descend on Nassau, the Bahamas, for the World Athletics Relays from the 4th to the 5th of May 2024. A total of 32 teams are entered for the men's 4x100 meters and 30 are entered for the women's 4x100 meters. There will also be 32 teams for the men's 4x400 meters, 27 for the women's 4x400 meters and 30 in the mixed 4x400 meters relays. Kenya will be represented by 24 athletes. Africa's fastest man, Ferdinand Omanyala, is on the team.
We have one goal, to make this team qualify to the Olympics. So it doesn't matter we will win. It doesn't matter. Matter we will take the bronze, silver and gold. What matters to us is qualifying this team to the Olympics.
In motorsports, at least 37 crews have so far confirmed participation in this year's Pearl of Africa rally, due to get underway from May 10th in Bukiwe and Jinja districts of Uganda. The annual motorsport event attracts local and international crews vying for both national and African rally championship points. Among the lineup are two international crews and five registered Africa rally championship teams, ensuring a mix of seasoned veterans and ambitious newcomers ready to tackle the challenging stages in and around Jinja. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, May 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday morning.
Freedom Day is here, and this year the focus is A Press for the Planet, under the theme Journalism in the Face of the Environmental Crisis. On this week's episode of Our Voices, we hear what environmental experts and journalists in Africa are highlighting as the issues at hand and available solutions in preserving our environment. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on The Voice.